it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi. I can't talk already, and it's only the first episode we're recording tonight. It's a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars: The Clone Wars. In this episode, after earthquakes have devastated the planet of Aleen, a Republic relief effort arrives, including the droids R2-D2 and C-3PO. When the native Aleen pleas go unheard, it becomes the duty of the droids to embark on a surreal journey through Aleen's subterranean world to save the planet. There will be Sassy Wolf, I've waited for you so long, Treebeard, and riddle monsters that may or may not be Force users. We're talking about Mercy Mission this week. How you doing, Chris, after I just butchered all of that?
I'm doing good.
That's good. Man, it's only the first episode we're recording tonight, and I already can't talk.
All right.
You want to know what
Starting
I really want to talk
strong.
About? Oh, my God. Can we talk about D23 for a second?
Oh, sure.
Oh, man. So first and foremost, those Last Jedi posters are really pretty, but I'm wondering why all the red.
It's very, like, Imperial Guard red.
I know. Like red is usually, like, the Sith color, and they have everybody dressed in red. Like, from Luke to Rey to Finn, Poe, and I think Leia was the other one, and there was one more. Maybe it was Kylo. But everybody's, like, in that red, and I was just like, whoa. That's a very bold choice of colors.
Well, it sounds like they're going in some weird directions in this, or at least they're saying they are. So I'm curious.
Yeah, because at D23, they also released that behind-the-scenes trailer. And first and foremost, I got teary just seeing Carrie Fisher. And then at the end of the video, when she was just like, yeah, Star Wars is family, I, like, cried. Like, I was watching it with my coworker, and we were both getting, like, super emotional watching Carrie.
What I focused in on are those Convries?
I was about to say the exact same thing. There's, like, kind of, they look too furry, and Convries have tails. So I'm not sure if those little creatures are Convries, because Convries
actually
look like...
they had a little tail wrapped around their feet.
Yeah,
I did a little, but here's the thing. We're going from the stylistic look of Clone Wars and Rebels into, quote-unquote, real life.
Yeah.
So they're going to look a little different, you know? Like Yoda does, or like anything does, you know, less stylized. So it might be, I don't know. It's
they
so close.
They kind of look mammal-y to me, though. They look kind of mammal-y almost. Like they're furry opposed to feathery, and they didn't really have a beak on them. So I don't know, but like I wasn't sure. Maybe they're just not complete. Maybe they weren't showing us a full Convery. But that would be really interesting, especially since we just talked about Convery's recently.
Well, that's why I'm hoping for that. That's why I'm steering it in that direction.
I also like the little wolf creature, too, because, like, I personally know how, like, Dave Filoni loves wolves. Like that's actually what, like, that's why he named his favorite clone Wolf. Like, he loves wolves, and, like, we're going to be getting a wolf in Rebels, so I'm wondering if that's going to be another connection because of that wolf creature. But it looks interesting, though, like... Did you see the part where, like, Finn and... I can't remember her name, but she's the new character. She's kind of short. She's Asian.
Yes.
Like, she's the new character. They were dressed in Imperial officer clothes. Like, I was getting super Rogue One vibes from that.
I think I'd read somewhere before that she might be a spy-type person. So she might be, like, on an infiltration mission or something.
I hope not, because I love her already. I don't even know her. I love her already. I love her from a picture and watching her actress talk at Celebration. I love her. She can't be a spy, no.
We should know more soon. There should be a proper trailer, a proper longer trailer fairly soon.
I'm wondering how, because they've already confirmed that they will not put Leia in episode 9, like they originally had planned. So I'm wondering what they're going to do with that.
I don't know. It depends on what they planned to do originally, which we don't know. So it's impossible to tell, you know, because you can't tell. It depends on whether... It depends on how much any plot twists or turns depended on her character and what she was supposed to do, you know?
Yeah. You know what I keep thinking about, though? I was thinking about it last night because I think about clones all the time. I think it would just be so cool to see the clone... I forgot his first name, but Tamara, he played all the clones in the movies. Last name Tamara, I think his last name is.
Uh-huh.
The guy who played all the clones, like Commander Cody and stuff. I would love to see him in the movie because we know that the clone Kix in canon was the only clone that made it to the Force Awakens timeline. And he's traveling around with Captain Athano and they're pirates, and Athano was in the first movie. So I would just love just... He doesn't even have to say anything, but just to have that actor in the background just to be like, look, it's Kix. Like, I would die.
They'd have to age him up a lot.
Yeah, not too terribly much, because the thing about Kix was he was cryogenically frozen.
Oh, okay.
And I feel like I told the story
on
here
before. Yeah, you did tell this story, and it would be a lot. I mean, yeah, they would have to put him in the background, because otherwise if they tried to introduce him, it would be a lot of a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah, but, like, just having him in the background, I would just freak out, because then we could always have the little side comic of Luke just being like, oh, you fought in the Clone Wars, tell me about my father. That'd be so great, but I would rather it be Rex after the Battle of Endor talking with Luke and Leia about their parents, because I think that would be so much better. But I think that would be just, like, a nice little, like, Clone Wars reference. Like, they don't even have to say anything, it's just Kix sitting with his new pirate crew in the background. And just hanging out with Captain Athano, I would die. So that would make my day. But the movie, like, you know, judging from behind the scenes stuff, which is kind of hard to tell, it looks like it's gonna be a really pretty movie.
I'm interested. The filmmaker Rian Johnson's an interesting filmmaker, and he's good. So, and he had a lot to do with the writing of the story of it. So.
I liked his failed Wookiee sounds, and, like, John Boyega was just like, he can't make a Wookiee sound. And you see Ryan just going, meow, meow. It was really cute.
Well, you know, they've released a picture from the Han Solo movie.
Mm-hmm.
Of the actor playing Chewie looking, you know, on set, but you can see a camera where they're watching the footage. And it's two Wookiees, like, hugging each other, like, having a face-to-face embrace.
I saw that. A lot of people are wondering if it's Mala.
Mala.
Your lover, Mala.
I'll have a little freak out in the theater if we get
Mala.
Your
girlfriend. I know how much you love her. You talked her up when we did commentary.
A younger Mala. Let's just say that, too.
Yeah, maybe she'll actually get that, like, Brazilian wax that we talked about when we did our Christmas special commentary.
It's a big Brazilian wax. That's a lot of wax.
They might as well just, like, dump her in a vat and just, like, let her roll down, like, the concrete.
You're gonna take half of Madame Tussauds to do that, pull that off.
So, I don't know.
Literally.
If vets can take matted dogs and make them look adorable, they can do something with Mala. But that's, I know I saw that. I was like, oh my god, Mala might show up, and I, like, Chris would be so excited.
I will be.
I'm still not yet excited for the Han Solo movie. Not yet.
We'll see. I'm interested. From what it sounds like, I'm sort of glad that they, like, put the halt on to making it a 21 Jump Street style comedy, you know. I don't want it to be a comedy. So I'm Ron Howard's an interesting filmmaker. He's never really a bad filmmaker. Sometimes he's really good, sometimes he's just super competent, but he also has history with Lucasfilm and stuff, so
yeah.
I'm very curious to see how it works out.
I wouldn't mind it being a bit of a comedy, just because Han is kind of a funny character.
Well, there can be comedy in it.
But I agree, not like 21 Jump Street. That's
right.
A little bit too
not a wisecracking meta comedy, and that's what those guys that were directing it are sort of known for. So
yeah,
you know, I don't know.
Is it the Russo brothers?
I think so. Yeah,
because I know they did some of the Marvel movies. I think, Civil War and Winter Soldier.
Oh, maybe it's not the Russo brothers, and
yeah.
It was a team, I know that, but...
Han Solo director.
Ex-director.
I forgot who it is now. director Shake Up. Philip Lord and Christopher Miller, so it wasn't... them. Okay. I was about to say, because I was like, wait, the Russo Brothers did,
Civil War wasn't a meta-comedy, so...
Yeah, and I was about to say, the Russo Brothers did Winter Soldier, and that is definitely a political thriller.
Right, so. Right. Had a couple chuckles in it, but that's about it, yeah.
Yeah, mostly the chuckle is how loud Bucky's arm is, because it just sits there. Every time Bucky moved, it would just go...
Bucky's never going to be able to masturbate secretly ever in his life.
That is mine and my best friend's, favorite Bucky joke, is just, the image of him masturbating, and, Steve can always tell, because he just hears in the next bed, just, and Steve is just like, God, just use your other hand. I'm trying to sleep. So, and then Bucky would be like, Steve, come join me. He'd be like, okay. So, but that's the fanfiction side of that joke. So, yeah, I that behind-the-scenes footage of Last Jedi got me, super pumped for the movie. I'm ready. When we're recording now, Comic-Con is this coming weekend, so I'm hoping by the next time we record, we'll have a new trailer. I doubt it, though.
I'm hoping, yeah.
I doubt it. So, but we'll see. Star Wars has been kind of pulling back from Comic-Con a bit, especially since D23 was the weekend before. I think they might have put all their big guns there. But we'll see. We never know, so. Well, you ready to get started on Mercy Mission?
Let's do it.
All right. Mercy Mission, Mercy Minchin. Minchin, Mercy Minchin. Oh, it's going to be
one of those should nights. Be drinking tonight, Hope.
I know, right? Can pour me some. Mercy Mission is the 71st episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on October 7, 2011. It was written by Bonnie Mark and directed by by Danny Keller, which is not anywhere close to Brian, which was what I was about to say. Danny Keller. Some extra information for you. While airing the episode, Cartoon Network mistakenly called it multiple times Mercy Mansion.
Wow.
I know. Good job,
that makes sense.
I know. Good job. In this episode's online episode guide, the title has been tagged, The Droids Are in Trouble Again. In Trouble Again was the theme song to Star Wars Droids animated television series. Mercy Mission was the least watched episode of the series up to this date, with only 1.3 million viewers. James Arnold Taylor, who is Obi-Wan, and Catherine Tabor, who is Padme, got to stretch their creature talents by voicing all of the Alina people. Taylor also voiced King Manchucho. Kara, I'm so sorry, I meant to butcher your last name. Kara Piffko, who voiced Orphne in the episode, was also Sue the Quain in The Deserter, Dr. Bull in the Zilla Beast episodes, and has played a few of the Night Sisters. This is Commander Wolf's first big appearance since the Malevolence arc way back in Season 1 when he was stranded in space with Plo Koon. Sometime in between then and now, he got a cybernetic eye. The Wikipedia says it was from a fight with Asajj Ventress. Commander Wolf is also important because he's one of the two clones traveling with Rex at the beginning of Rebels Season 2. He's the paranoid one who calls the Empire afraid that the Jedi are back for revenge. It's still not known how Wolf, Rex, and Gregor removed their inhibitor chips so they didn't participate in Order 66. It's also not known if Rex sought out Wolf and Gregor after the events of the Ahsoka novel when Rex helped Ahsoka escape Order 66. Dave Filoni has also stated many times that Wolf is his favorite clone. He's one of my top favorites as well, which is why he's all my notes. Anyway, And so last week I was saying that I didn't write down the episode featurette because it was fan questions from Dave Filoni. Wikipedia summarized all the fan questions asked to Dave Filoni in the episode featurette about whether or not Orphany was force sensitive. So thank you, Wikipedia. This is so much shorter. It says, when asked about Orphany and her powers, the Clone Wars supervising director Dave Filoni said that the certain aspects of her person, such as her inhuman speed, were just natural traits found in members of her species. However, her ability to disappear as a cloud of light was in fact a magical ability. He likened Orphany to a light side equivalent of the Night Sisters. Although she is not a direct Force user, her powers did stem from the Force. All which right. I have notes so about later. Yeah, I have notes about that later because I was just like, oh, I'll get to that later. So, but yeah, that's I'm so excited about Wolf. Oh, guys.
You know who else has a power stem from the Force?
that was clever, Honeywell. That was really clever.
Been watering my flowers.
What's it called? The petal? The petel? And that's the penis part of the flower?
Pistol.
Pistol! Have you been watering your pistol?
Yoda's been going around with his pistol half-cocked.
And wanting to pollinate all the people.
Not shooting blanks, Yoda is not shooting.
That one got away from you.
Alright. All they right, all get away from me.
What's the space platitude for the week?
Understanding is honoring the truth beneath the surface. In bed.
You gotta honor those things under the sheets. You gotta honor those under the sheet surfaces.
I guess so.
That's important. You gotta, on top of the sheets, now it's dirty. Under the sheets, it's like honor. So, I don't know. It's not always dirty on top of the sheets. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Not always gold in the world of space platitudes.
Up in the handcuffs in the middle of the floor. Okay, we're getting dirty then. But the sheets, no, they're fine. That's not dirty. Anyway. Maybe we should just move on to Act 1.
Act 1.
All right.
Imagine that.
Act 1. Oh no! The planet of Aleen is devastated by earthquakes. And it's not just one city. The entire planet apparently got shook up and causing a ton of destruction and death. While on the way to another fight, Commander Wolf is sent to provide aid to the Aleena people. Padme and Yoda calls in to see how well it's going. Wolf will get to the planet, start the people on the building process, and then he has to leave ASAP because Plo Koon is in desperate need of reinforcements because Plo Koon's stuck in a lot of shit. So they start the landing procedures. C-3PO and R2-D2 board a landing ship, and Wolf shoves 3PO down. And 3PO is like, "My word, you're a brute!" And Wolf is like, "I've killed more droids than I can count. I won't hesitate to shove you into space. I'll murder you with my eye rolls. Now sit down and shut up." The landing ship is gliding through the clouds when they spot an Aleena riding the massive dragonfly, and it cheers at them. And the clone pilot is like, "Crap, this is another annoying planet. Oh, God." The clones land on the planet and start to unload the ships. Wolf approaches the people, a race of gray frogger-looking people, because they look like tiny frogs, and they jump from platform to platform, so I named them the Froggers. They're the Froggers. Is that okay? Okay, it's gonna be
sure.
Okay. It's gonna be okay. And their king, Manchucho, greets them. Manchucho babbles at Wolf in an unknown language. Wolf is like, "I don't have time for this. 3PO, make yourself useful." 3PO tells the king that they're from the Republic and they're there to help. The king hugs 3PO's leg, and Wolf looks scandalized, praying King Frogger doesn't touch him. The Frogger King welcomes them to their disaster. He says that the gods below will be pleased, and the Aleena people cheer and dance. Wolf flashes an eye roll for the ages, and suddenly the ground shakes. It's an aftershock from the original earthquake. 3PO calms the Aleena, and when the shaking stops, they praise 3PO like he stopped the ground from moving. Wolf's had enough of this and sets the clones to work on unloading the crates and looking for unsafe areas. Their job is to get the Alina computer systems up and running with instructions on how to work the equipment the clones will leave. The Alina wants the clones to make peace with the ground. Wolf scoffs and sets Trooper Sinker, R2, and a handful of Alina to work to get the communication hub back online. Okay, I have a first question.
Okay.
Is this a new episode to you?
Yes, it is.
So we finally reached the new episodes for
yes,
you?
Yes, yes.
Yay! Welcome to the unknown, Chris.
I'm loving it.
Oh, I'm so happy for
I'm
you.
I'm definitely getting more enjoyment from not having seen him before, so it's completely fresh.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the better animation is just like, oh, I'm going into this whole new world where basically it's always been like this, but it's every time they kick it up a notch, it just gets closer to being, you know, basically a realistic moving painting. And this one's gorgeous. Even though there's not a lot of, like, really, like, weird or amazingly inventive or visual stuff in it. There was just a scene with Wolf and 3PO when they were talking, and the physicality of them has just taken a step up, you know?
Something that's so good is just, like, Wolf's, like, little facial moves. Like, how he just was, like, constantly scoff. Like, when he looks scandalized when Manchu Joe hugs 3PO, he just has this look of, like, oh, God, don't let it touch me.
See, those guys are, I got my notes, those guys are some of my favorite Episode 1 background creatures. There were a lot of them running around in the background, and one of them was a pod racer, too. He was the one that made that really, he got blown up and he made a really, like, high-pitched, creaky, froggy sound before he went like, and then, like, hit the stalagmite or tight.
If it's from the ground, it's a mite. If it's from the ceiling, it's a tight because it
has
to
hold
on tight.
I can't remember if it was from the ceiling or the floor.
Yeah, it has to hold on tight to the ceiling. That's how I always remember.
But he hit that big piece of rock in episode
He hit
one.
The wall and splattered.
My only other real note for this, besides it being a realistic moving painting, is you'd think that they would just have, like, have you ever watched the old Buck Rogers TV show?
Not really, no.
They had their version of C-3PO was basically like Flavor Flav's clock. it was just a round thing that this other robot wore around his, I think his name was Dr. Pretorius or something like that. And the other little robot wore him around his neck like a chain.
I just imagine it just being like, Flavor Flav, it's 5 o'clock!
Yeah. Flavor Flav! You'd think by now, instead of having to drag C-3PO along, they could just have a little box that translates languages, you know?
You know, I was thinking about that. Like, I understand that 3PO is a legacy character, but they could have used, like, any protocol droid.
The technology in Star Wars is weird because they have technology that can do some things, but then there's some ways that their technology is really clunky too.
I was wondering, maybe 3PO is special because, like, Anakin specifically made him, so maybe not all protocol droids has his mass, you know, knowledge of, like, different languages
maybe.
And stuff. It might be something that, like, Anakin invented him to have.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But that's about all I had for part one. Not a lot really happens in this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, let's talk some clones.
Really?
I'm gonna talk about my clones. I know, surprise, surprise, it's me. Oh my god, I've waited for this episode with Commander Wolf. I love him so much, and he's such a big grumpy pants.
Yeah, I always call him, like, grumpy Rex or Angry Rex.
He's so grumpy at all times. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually...
Wouldn't you be if he just had one eye?
What?
Well, he's got two eyes, actually.
Yeah, I mean, the cybernetics is his other eye, but, like, I love Wolf. Like, he's one of my favorites. And it was this episode that made me love him so much. Because before, he was always just, like, Commander Wolf. He was cool looking. He was in the background stuff. But this episode, he was just, like, the worst person to be on this mission because he has zero fucks to give. And he's just like, I need to get out of here. I need to get a clone. Clone, guys, let's get going. And then, like, 3PO was there, and he's just like, oh. Like, this was the episode I was like, I really like this Wolf guy. Because you know, he hasn't really been in the series, and they, like, really defined him right away. Like, this is who he is. And so my other clone note that I had was I really like seeing how the Wolf Pack is very different from the 501st. I mean, because we're so used to seeing Anakin and Rex and the 501st, because, like, they're, since Anakin's one of the main characters, we're usually with the 501st. We're very rarely with other clone groups. Mostly the only other people is Cody and the 212th. And the 501st are just a big group of oddballs, and they're individuals, and they tend to have, like, a lot of jokers, like Jesse in their ranks. But the Wolf Pack is very different. It's not just Wolf. They're all like this. And they feel like they're more disciplined. They're all kind of that sarcastic, dry humor, but they don't really, you know, like, go out of their way to be, like, kooky, like, say, like, Jesse or Fives or Kix. And they don't seem to have a big tolerance for nonsense.
No.
And so, like, another example I have is Commander Cody and the 212th serving under Obi-Wan. Like, Cody will drop a joke here and there, just like Obi-Wan, but Cody is also more calm and thoughtful like Obi-Wan. Rex, Fives, and Jesse, and Kix, and the rest of the 501st tend to have extreme natures like Anakin. But Plo Koon is a very dry and steady and a little humor, like, dry humor, sassy-less Jedi, and Commander Wolf and his Wolf Pack are a lot like him. So it's really cool to see how these clones have taken on, like, their Jedi Masters, like, traits, because they all really follow very closely to their different kinds of Jedi and how they act. So I like being with this, with the Wolf Pack, to see how different they are from the 501st.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes them feel more real, because Plo Koon is a much more steady, stay-on-the-road kind of Jedi, opposed to Anakin and his men. So I just really like that we're with a different group of clones this time around.
Well, it's funny because they're like the more organized and, you know, no nonsense group of clones. You would think this wouldn't necessarily be the mission to send them on. You would think that they would be a more combat, like, send them to the more super combat mission and send more of the
At the beginning of the episode, they were on their way to the battle. They were just the closest people to the planet.
Okay.
Yeah, because Wolf said in the beginning, like, you know, I'm on my way to go see Plo Koon. We'll stop here, but I have to get to Plo Koon. He needs reinforcements.
That's why he's rolling his eyes.
Yeah, because she needs to get out of there.
Yep.
Though there's a lot of really funny fan art of Plo Koon. And Wolf, and, like, Plo Koon is trying to make him laugh. And my favorite one, because you know how Plo Koon has his, like, his ears kind of curl around into those little spike things by his shin?
Uh-huh.
I found one, and Plo Koon was like, "Commander," and he looks over, and he pulls his ears out, like, really wide. So they're, like a foot off his head either way. And Wolf just stares at him, and Plo Koon is like, "Oh, I was trying to make you laugh. You're always so serious, but I just ruined your day." Wolf is like, "No, sir, it was funny. Ha 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 ha. Wolf Pack laugh. Ha 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 ha." Because they're all nerds and I love them. Yeah, but it's interesting. I like seeing Wolf now opposed to how he is in Rebels. And when we eventually get to Rebels, we can always look back and be like, "Hey, remember when he rolled his eyes all the time?"
Right.
But he's, like, super paranoid in Rebels, so I can't wait to get there and see. You kind of, like, follow his journey, because he's not in Clone Wars a lot. After this and next week, there's only, like, one or two more times that Wolf shows up before he's in What Rebels, but I'm excited to see how he continues to develop, so. I also like King Machucho, little King Frogger. He's a really fun little guy.
They all have those great mouth, like, reptile mouths that make them always look like they just have a big wide grin. They always, mm-hmm. you know, no matter what mood they're in, they always look like they just have a big goofy grin on. And then,
yeah.
And then it's even funnier because their teeth are little pointy teeth, so they look a little like, they, you know, like stunted happy crocodiles or something. It's pretty cool.
They actually remind me of puppies because they're, like, all wiggling. And, like, one of them, like, you know, as Wolf and C-3PO were walking away, this, like, one little one was just like, like, it just started panting, and they're always wiggling and dancing and singing, and Wolf ain't got time for that. So it just makes for a really great comedy that all these, like, tiny little puppy creatures are, like, with this, like, really super serious guy who just really just wants to get the fuck out of there. So, I like the Alina. I think they're cool little guys, and they're really totally welcomed because I love them so much. But that's all I have for Act 1. You want to go to Act 2?
Ready for Act 2.
All right, so Act 2. Clone troopers, Booster, and Sinker blast in the door to the communication hub, and the Alina are very impressed. They even just go, ooh. But the communication hub is in shambles, and everything is pretty busted up from the earthquakes. But they still got power, and the clones start uploading the Republic reboot system. Another quake hits, and it doesn't seem like an aftershock. Boost and Sinker are like, I have a constantly used Star Wars line ready, because we have a really bad feeling about this. Outside, among the Alina people, Wolf wonders who he pissed off to get stuck on this mission. He's pointing out where the hospital and the outdoor kitchen will go with the food supplies. The Frogger King insists Wolf go, possibly underground, and make peace with the Earth. Also, he doesn't like the placement of the outdoor kitchen. And Wolf is like, I'm not Toph Beifong here. I don't control the ground. We are dropping this shit off, and then we're going. End of discussion. And suddenly, King Frogger and the Alina drop to their knees and start chanting. And Wolf is like, what is happening? What is my life right now? This is it. This is it. I'm over this bullshit. And he leaves 3PO to help the king out. 3PO goes to the communication hub, where Sinker and Boost leave R2 to finish the download. They shove 3PO out of the way because they're tough guys and the wolf pack don't got no time for manners. And the clones are with the clones gone, the Alina want to show 3PO something. R2 reluctantly follows in case he needs to save the day again, because it's Clone Wars, and R2 always saves the day. The Alina lead the droids to an outdoor temple of sorts. At the bottom of the pass, there's a golden metal seal that's been pushed off the top of a hole. There's a small gap that's just about droid size, so you can kind of see where this is going. Another earthquake hits, and 3PO falls down the hole. R2 is like, oh, I guess I should go get him. And follows 3PO down the hall. One of the Alina panics and sprints back to find help. King Frogger is out of fucks to give with Wolf. The king tries to tell Wolf that something bad has happened, but Wolf can't understand him. Blowing off the little guy, the king abandons Wolf to go to the seal. The droids land in an underground tunnel covered in vines. Making their way through the tunnels, glowing fairy, flying fairy-looking creatures fly around them and lead them towards light. They don't find a way out. They find an entirely different subterranean world down there. Suddenly, Treebeard appears! The Ents are here to save us! Sentient tree creatures called Kindalo are pissed that the surface creatures broke their peace. Unlike normal trees, the outside air poisons them. They cause the earthquakes to shake out the air so the Kindalo can live. Treebeard doesn't care why the droids are there, but he points them towards someone named Orphne. Above the seal, above ground at the seal, King Frogger leads the people in a chant. Good thing Wolf wasn't there, or the blood vessels in his eyes might burst. What do you think of Act 2?
This is starting to to really go retro for me. It's reminding me a little Splinter of the Mind's Eye. It's a little reminding me a little like the little Firefly creatures are reminding me a little bit of the Ewok Adventure movie. The caves underground are pure Splinter of the Mind's Eye. So it's got a really, like, retro feel to it. So I was really sort of digging this. And then it's funny, I had Ents also in my notes, but I called them Bendu Ents.
Oh!
And my only other note is those critters' chants sound like the dirty songs that they sing in basic training when they're marching.
Really?
Yeah, the, like, call and response where the drill sergeant sings, you know, like,
I don't know, but I've been told.
I don't know, but I've been told.
Eskimo pussy is mighty cold.
Eskimo pussy is mighty cold.
You know, they go through their little chants, so they had, like, a million dirty little chants. That it was totally following the, like, melodic call and response theme to, like, military dirty chants, so I was wondering what it translates out to. I wish 3PO were there to tell us what sort of horrible chant they were doing.
I find it funny because Netflix, because I always watch Netflix with subtitles just in case, like, see how things are spelled and stuff. they actually write out all of their language, but it doesn't translate it. It's just like, Ituakawa. I'm just like, why are you doing this, Netflix? I guess so a deaf person can know what they're talking about.
Yeah, well, the deaf people know that they're just sort of chanting in a different language and you don't know what they're saying, you know? I would have thought it would have just said, like, foreign language chanting or something, unknown language chanting or something like that.
Yeah, every once in a while it does that. But also, what's great about the Netflix subtitles is they'll put in sound effects, too, so it's like, excited panting.
Yes, exactly.
Excited panting, pattering of feet. Like they the way that I need to write down some of like the Netflix explanations because they're really funny. I need to remember to do that next time because I think excited panting is my favorite, which is just that kind of thing that they like to do. So, for me, I love the design of the subterranean world. The tree people are, like, really cool looking, and they're so shaky and jittery. Like, they don't have nice, solid, fluid movements. They're just like, And so, I also didn't put it in my notes, but they're voiced by Dee Bradley Baker, who is the voice of the clones, so. But, I mean, the underground world is just so beautiful and haunting, and the lighting is fantastic for them. Like, I love how everything's, like, luminescent and almost glow-in-the-dark, right, including the tree people.
Yeah, the bioluminescent moss and stuff.
Yeah. So I really love the design of them, and the tree people are just really cool-looking. Like, they're probably one of my favorite parts of the episode. I also love watching Wolf slowly but surely getting more and more pissed off over the course of the episode. Like, he has his shit together at the beginning, but he's, like, starting to lose his cool.
Yeah, it's the slow burn. I think that's about all. That's about, like, that would be, like, the biggest note in the character sheet when they give it to the writers is, like, this guy just does a simmering slow burn through any episode he's in.
Yeah. And my only other note was more just, like, me thinking about stuff, and I just like to imagine old man Wolf in Rebels, and he just repeats this story all the time, and he's just like, Rex, you don't understand. The Lena just started chanting, and I couldn't handle it anymore, and then they were screaming at the ground, and I just can't. And old man Rex is like, I know, Wolf, you told us this story yesterday, and old man Gregor is just like, I'm a crazy person, and then they go fishing for Jupas. But, like, Rex being an old man just tells, Wolf just tells the story every single day, and poor Kanan and Ezra are like, we know about the Alina. You told us yesterday. Because, you know, like, old people like to tell their stories over and over again. But I like to imagine. Hey, we all need to hear about the penis piercings again. If you're a brand new person, and this is your first episode that you're listening to, go listen to the episode Grievous Intrigue. You will understand the penis piercings. It's still one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. Oh, man.
I was just telling someone that story the other day at work.
Yay! Well, that's all I have for Act 2. You want to do Act 3?
Let's polish this one off.
All right. So, Act 3. 3PO is confused why Treebeard said that the surface dwellers destroyed the piece, since it was obviously the earthquakes. They had to go find this orphanage person to get answers. The fairy things show up again, and they lead them to an open area where there's like a flower pattern floor design in stone, and the fairies are zooming all over the center. And they gather together to form a frog flower lady sitting on her tulip throne. She licks 3PO, and she can't eat him. 3PO is very happy that he can't get eaten. She's wicked fast and all up in 3PO's bubble space. The underworld and the surface people have a covenant to keep about the ground to keep them apart to help them survive. Their most sacred site was attacked, so the underground people made the earthquakes in retribution. Orphne cannot help them outright, but she gives them a riddle to find the path. You can run, but you cannot walk. You have a mouth, but you cannot talk. You have a head, but never weep. You have a bed, but never sleep. She vanishes in a whirlwind of fairies, leaving the droids to figure it out. 3PO is all like, woe is me, we're all doomed. And he realizes that the riddle is the key to get out of there, and he starts trying to figure it out the most logical way that doesn't work when you're actually dealing with riddles. Well, luckily, R2 was the Yavin Riddle champion. He finds the seal that means water and pours water on it. It lights up the entire area while 3PO takes credit for figuring out the riddle answer. It was, to figure out the riddle answer was a riddle, even though R2 saved the day again. The centerpiece starts to shake. R2 hops on it with 3PO and the water shoots them up through the ground. They get spat out to the surface and the Alina are like, "Our singing work! Power of song, guys! Yeah!" And 3PO notices vapors coming out of the golden seal, and it's hurting the Alina people. 3PO realizes that that's the breach, and that the Alina can't seal the breach because it will kill them. Banding together, the droids push the seal back in place, fixing the problem to begin with. The clones are moving out. King Frogger thanks 3PO, and the droids hop on a ship to leave. One of the Alina hugs R2, and it's really super cute, you guys. It's a really cute moment. And he joins 3PO on the ship. And 3PO is like, "Commander Wolf, we have the greatest story!" And Wolf eye rolls and just says, "First chance I get, I'm launching you two into space." Which sort of happens next week. So come back for another episode of J-Guys and Jedi to see how it's true. The end.
Well, we get to meet Space Poison Ivy and Space and she's sort of Space Poison Ivy and Space Gollum at the same time.
Oh, man, I didn't even connect her to Poison Ivy. I would have called her that. I should have totally did that. I didn't connect her to that. I was trying to think of, like, a good plant person, and, like, Poison Ivy did not come to my mind.
She was just like she had kind of the praying mantis head going on.
Yeah.
That was my only real note, except for one more, which was this whole mystic journey ends and is resolved basically by replacing a manhole cover.
I know, right?
It's literally, and the thing about that is, though, I just don't see how, like, if with this underground world and just, you know, that breach, that amount of open area is enough to cause worldwide problems with how sealed off is the underground world from, you know, the outside world that the atmosphere can't get, that all it takes is a hole. I mean, it was just open to crack. So it was like basically sort of like maybe like two manhole covers worth of space that would have the gas pouring into the underground, and that was enough to like jeopardize the world. That's they're on shaky ground on this planet, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it's something that small that can jeopardize the whole planet, you know. So I thought that was a little weird, but you know.
See, my thing is they never tell us how or why the seal was moved in the first place. It was moved at some point, which made the underground people cause the earthquakes. But how did it get moved originally? Because I don't think the Alina did it, because they're so spiritual that they know that it's important to not move it. So how did it get moved?
If they moved it, there'd
be
a bunch of dead Alina around it, too, from breathing in the gas coming out of it, you know?
So. Yeah, so, like, how did it get moved in the first place, and why? I blame Dooku. Dooku showed up, was like, "Let me move this manhole cover," and he left. And then people were like, "Oh no, earthquakes!"
And let's put it this way: the way that they're describing this, the air on the surface is heavier than the atmosphere in the underground.
Yeah.
Right. So, because the underground air rises out, and the above ground air is seeping down like water, you know. Mm-hmm. So. That just that doesn't make sense out of physics, and it should be the opposite. The thicker atmosphere should be on the lower tier, and then when you open up a hole like that, the atmosphere from below should just be shooting straight up in the air into the atmosphere. It shouldn't be hanging around on the surface gassing little frog people. So
yeah,
science is the Star Wars never has been about.
Good science.
Being all about the science, yeah.
I mean, look at the Mon Cala arc. Anakin dove like a bajillion feet and didn't die.
That's the most egregious so far out of all of Clone Wars.
Yeah, that was the only thing. Maybe Grievous was like, I'm gonna move this manhole cover to make this place smell like shit.
And I'm off. Ha ha. Yeah.
So,
then I leave.
Just so you guys know, for my notes, my most important one is first, which is I counted 7 times that Wolf rolled his eyes over the course of 22 minutes. 7 times.
Pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, he was sassy.
That's pretty much the whole time he's on screen, basically.
Yeah, yeah. There was one time he did it like 3 times in one scene. Like, he like rolled his eyes in the background, and then he said, "Do I need this?" And he looked up at the ground, and then he rolled his eyes again as he was walking away. But my favorite is like very much at the end when 3PO was like, "Let me tell you the story." And he like eye rolls his entire head and then looks at his clone and then looks back at 3PO. And it's great. And I love it. And I love him. So I've also always sucked at riddles. I've always hated riddles my entire life.
I got it right off the bat. As soon as they said bed, I was just like, there's a lot of river bed. Okay.
Like, see, I've always sucked at riddles. Like, they're not anything. I've never been good at them. Like, I always suck at them. They've always gone way over my head, and I hate riddles. I've never been good at them. So, anyway. I think Orphne is a really cool character. But I kind of have to wonder about the magic side of her, because Dave Filoni said that she uses magic, like the Night Sisters uses magic, and that her powers are based on the light side. And the Night Sisters use dark side in use the dark side of the Force, and they actually say they use the dark side of the Force. So if Orphe is like them, then she should be using the light side, right? And she said that, but she's not a Force user. Like that's so weird. Like I feel like if you can manipulate the Force, doesn't that make you a Force user? I think this is so early in the Clone Wars canon, and at the time it wasn't under the Disney canon umbrella yet, that they weren't in the idea of calling this kind of magic an aspect of the Force, especially since then we've seen other races like the Lasats use quote-unquote magic, but it's actually part of the Force, and they've
right.
said...
Yeah, it's just another name for the Force that somebody else has come up with, basically, yeah. I would think.
So I think this is just another Clone Wars experiment with her. I just kind of wish she was a little bit more defined. And I also wish we had her more. I really like that character. I wish we had her more in the episode. Because she's there probably about 3 minutes tops.
Yeah, tops, yeah.
Yeah, because I remembered her very much when I started watching this episode. I first forgot how little she was in the episode. Because like, she's a very prominent thing in my head that I remember before watching this, so... But yeah, I wish they just defined that in her a little bit more. So you know how 3PO is usually super annoying? He's not that bad this episode.
Well, he's on the job. He's being, you know, when he's working, he's supposed to be non-annoying and non-offensive, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's what it is, because he's very patient with the people, especially with the Alina, because everybody else is over it really fast, but he actually takes time to listen to them, and trying to, like, figure out their customs. And I kind of like that it's the droids that save the day. And I like that it's 3PO that kind of saves the day, too. Even though R2 actually saves the day a few times.
So is R2.
Yeah, but I did like that he wasn't, like, super really annoying this episode. And it was a good 3PO episode. And Wolf is just so funny because he's so serious. And it makes for really good comedy with 3PO.
He's playing the Han Solo role. Basically.
Oh, he is. Yay. That just made me so happy just thinking about that. So now I want him in the Millennium Falcon with Chewie. Go, Wolf, go. But that's all I had for this episode. So you want to score it up?
I will. I actually took this down a half point after watching the next episode, which I enjoyed a lot more. And I'll explain. Basically, just without saying much about the next episode, is sort of a better version of this episode. This is like sort of a warm up for the next episode. So I gave it a 7.5, solid. But it could have been an 8, but it's a solid, fun episode.
I did the opposite. I like this one better. And my next episode was just slightly lower for me, just slightly. So, but for me, there's a lot of things I really like about this episode. Wolf is my life, and he's just so sassy with his eye rolling throughout the entire episode. And he's just done within like the first 5 minutes, and he has to put up with all this bullshit for 22 minutes, and it just makes for really good comedy. And I love the little Alina people. I think they're just adorable and they're funny. And the design of the subterranean world is just really cool. And Orphne is a really intriguing character, but I just wish she was defined more, and I wish she was in the episode more. And 3PO isn't that annoying, which is really nice for him, and it's just a fun little romp. And to be really honest, this is one of my guilty pleasure episodes, and it's all because of Wolf.
This one harkens back, and the next one harken back to the Ewok adventures and the droids comics and TV show and stuff like that. So these are very, like, these two episodes are very old school. You know, they take place in the newest Star Wars at the time, but they had just a nice old, you know, it's got Anthony Daniels in it and stuff too, so it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, so I gave the episode an 8 out of 10.
Alright, so we're close on this one. I'm interested to see how it goes on the next episode.
Yeah. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback at iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. Especially on iTunes, because if you rate and review our show, it helps people find the show. And this week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, Padawan Loss. Take it away, Chris.
All right, the first one here is from Aaron Henley, and it says, "Sorry I've been away so long, but to quote the great Arnold, I'm back." I don't know if I think Arnold has said I'm back. Alternate episode titles, Lord of the Padawans, Lost, the Good Ones We Promise, and Predators. Yes, it's very Predators, I thought. I love this little arc. Ahsoka grows into more of a leadership role, which will come in handy later in life. We find out just how badass Transdotians can be, and that they speak. Or if you wanted to be uber fanboyish, they're still doing the hisses we saw Bossk doing, but the universal translators just make it basic. Which actually doesn't work, because then why can we understand Wookiee? Oh well. Or why can't we understand Wookiee, I think is what he was saying. Oh well. That would be fun to have Wookiee translated.
Yeah.
And there's obviously a lot of people who understand it. I think another big point is we start seeing more different ages of more species with this episode. Again, this will come into play later with probably my most favorite arc ever, because of one certain furry Padawan who in my headcanon survived Order 66 no matter what. While not groundbreaking or mind-blowing, it's a nice little adventure, and further solidified that the back half of Season 3 was the best part of that season.
Yes, it was.
All right, and we got one from Paul C. Kelly. Oh, no Patrick Delmore again this week. Oh, well, I'll rest my...
Sorry, guys!
Paul C. Kelly says, "Just rewatched this after hearing you guys. Funny when Captain... Rex reports no sign of Ahsoka. Anakin is like, not good enough, Rex, try again. Little hint of Vader." Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Transdotians remind me of the Goombas from the Super Mario Brothers movie on steroids with normal size heads. That's pretty. One reason I like the Super Mario Brothers a lot more than a lot of people did. I thought it was a fairly decent movie.
You know, they just released a video of, like, groundbreaking things in cinema. Super Mario Brothers was actually the first movie to do, I think, digitalized backgrounds, like adding people in the background digitally in a full motion, like, movie film. And it's now standard, so standard to do it nowadays. But it was the first movie to do it, to add, like, backgrounds digitally.
Yeah, and it had one of my favorite musicians. Mojo Nixon is one of the Goombas with the shrunken head. Anyway, Paul C. Kelly goes on to say, "One reason the Padawans give up so easy and let the others get killed is that they had a traditional Jedi as their master and not Anakin, who aspires Ahsoka to never let go. Ahsoka and Khalifa remind me of Anakin and Luminara in that episode where she asks Anakin, will he be ready to let go if he had to? Also wonder if Anakin would have gone down a different path if Plo Koon was his master. He seemed to allow Anakin to see a bigger picture on his own. Obi-Wan, I think, struggled with that."
That's a really good point.
All right, and here we are to the Kit Kat part, and we did you get a package from Dario?
I did get a package from Dario. I was about to ask you that.
Let's do our new package from Dario then.
And I'm guessing it's from Japan because it's Hokkaido melon, and Hokkaido is in Japan. Oh my gosh, I didn't open this. I wasn't sure if you got a package or not, so...
Well, Hokkaido melon looks very much like a cantaloupe. So yeah. It's basically a cantaloupe. The picture of the Kit Kat candy is cantaloupe color. It opens up almost like a pack of gum. Oh, it's got three little packs inside of it.
Oh, it smells
How
like
crafty.
Fruit. It smells like fruit.
I haven't got mine open yet.
So if you don't know...
Oh my god, it smells similar to the cheesecake ones that I got that were fantastic.
Well, if you guys don't know, Chris hates American candies and Kit Kats in general. So our friend Dario Gonzalez is a flight attendant, and he sends us candy from all over the world for us to review. And today we have Japanese Hokkaido Melon Kit Kat. And it smells like melon.
Yes, it certainly does. And
oh my god.
Mine is really soft. Yeah, Dario was saying... He sent me a picture of these and said, "You lucky guys." So I'm imagining he tried them. So I'm guessing they're good. I haven't taken a bite yet. Mine are all mushy a little bit, but it's hot as hell here. So
it tastes like cream flavored cantaloupe, like cantaloupe flavored cream. It's amazing.
God. The cantaloupe flavor is so distinct in it.
My god, it's so good. Because it's not too sweet either?
No, it's a very light, fruity flavor.
These
are delicious.
Oh man, Dario, thank you so much for this. Oh my god.
You know
how, like five of them.
I don't know how to describe it, but like sweet stuff and savory stuff has this sort of flavor profile. But fruit has that sort of high... It's almost like higher pitched, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like almost like a fresher, more light thing. And this has that too. It's like you're getting a little... It's reminds me of like the old days when they first made the peach tea. What the hell is that brand? I got one right here. Snapple Peach Tea. Back in the day, you could actually taste the skin of the peach in the tea, you know, from the juice before it got super sweet.
And this, that's why I prefer raspberry tea, but peach tea is also incredibly good.
Mm-hmm.
But I also live in the South, so I love everything peaches, because I live in Georgia. So.
Remember I was telling you about the sad peach tree?
Yeah.
It just had one peach. It's got dozens and dozens of peaches on it this year. I walked by it today.
Yay! Our peach tree in our yard is starting to come in with peaches, and they're covered in peaches. Oh,
so
man,
I'm excited. Might be able to get a... Like, if it had 10 peaches on it, I wouldn't steal a peach, but I'll steal a peach if it has 100 peaches on it.
But thank you, Dario. That was so good.
That was delicious.
Can we eat one of the other packs next week? No, we gotta do a new
candy. It literally tastes like when you lick the skin of a cantaloupe.
Yeah, but if you spray just like the tiniest little bit of whipped cream and then lick the skin.
Yes, yes.
That's what it tastes like. Well, that's all I have. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. And that's spelled out TWOTRUEFREAKS. And not the number 2. So I shouldn't even have said that and put that in people's heads. So spell it out. And that's our almighty website filled with podcasts. And basically there's 2 things on there that you're interested in. And that's all our podcasts and our Amazon link where you can go and when you buy stuff at Amazon, it kicks us back some money. We are
it's
on
free
Facebook.
It's free for you to do that too.
What's that?
It's free for you to do it too.
Right, that's right. You don't pay any extra. They take it out of their own money. What, for whatever reason, whatever logic, I don't care. Fine, Amazon. We have a Facebook page, Two True Freaks, and we have the Two True Freaks Cantina, which is exactly what it sounds like. And if you go and join those pages, you'll find out about all our other podcasts. Some of them have their own pages and stuff like that. So if you have a podcast that you follow on Two True Freaks, you can maybe find their Facebook page too, like Back to the Bins or Fear the Walking Dead cast or something like that. And that's about it. We're on Twitter with our Two True Freaks on Twitter with Gene, run by Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene.
And on a serious note, I'd like to send my condolences out to Gene for, this was a few weeks ago, obviously, because it just happened on recording, but Gene lost his dog, Athena.
Oh,
and
no!
It's the second dog they've lost in a little while, too, so it's just awful. There's been a lot of people's pets have been meeting an end, and it's really depressing for me. Like, I don't know if our Two True Freaks listener that's friends with me on Facebook, Brad Glenn, listens, but you know, I've never met him. He's in Australia. We've never met each other, but you know, we just sort of follow each other on Facebook, and I've been watching, you know, for probably like 6 or 7 years, you know, watching his posts, which, and his dog Doofus, and Doofus recently passed, and it was just, it's just so sad, you know. I didn't even meet the dog, and I felt like I met him because he talked about him so much, and yeah, it's been a bad run for pets, and not happy about it.
Guys, I'm so sorry to hear that.
One of my coworkers just lost her cat and was putting up posters looking for it.
I hope she finds it.
Me too.
I was, to switch gears again, I promoted one of our podcasts on our Twitter page, and I got a nice, kind of a funny response back, because Pablo Hidalgo was saying that, like, his favorite movie of all time is Jaws, and so I retweeted and I said, our friends have a podcast called Is It Jaws, where they review movies and compare it to Jaws to see if it's better, and somebody wrote back, shortest podcast ever. Is it Jaws? No. The end.
They haven't listened to an episode. That's actually kind of been addressed on Is It Jaws a couple times, so yeah, they should listen still. So where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me on Twitter. I run our Twitter page at JGuessandJedi. You can also find me at Hope Molinax, and I'm also the news writer for whatthefangirl.com, and as of right now, I just finished writing up a post about my favorite things from D23, and I covered everything from the behind-the-scenes Last Jedi footage to the Kingdom Hearts 3 trailer, because we finally got a release date. It's been 84 years. Oh my god. I freaked out. To Mary Poppins Returns, The Incredibles 2 is coming, Wreck-It Ralph 2... So I covered a little bit of everything, and I had a bunch of different posts that I liked. So, yeah, you can find that at whatthefangirl.com.
I thought Mary Poppins Returns was a joke.
I'm so excited for it because Lin-Manuel Miranda's in it, and if you guys know, I love him. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Disney has their claws in poor Lin-Manuel Miranda because he wrote music for Moana. He's now doing Mary Poppins Returns, and he's been slated to help Alan Menken, it's the composer, the original music.
Yeah, that's how the studios work. I mean,
I'm trying to remember the guy's name. Is it Alan Menken?
I think it is. I think that's how you pronounce it.
He's helping Alan Menken write the music for the live-action Little Mermaid. So they now have slated Lin-Manuel Miranda in 3 movies within, like, 3 years. So they have their claws in him now.
I'm sure he's quite pleased with that.
Yeah, because before, like, he had In the Heights, and then he had Hamilton, and everything blew up, and Disney was like, hey, do you want to do all the things? And he was just like, yes, that sounds great. I've made it now.
Well, so, it's a hot property, so might as well get on that while they're hot, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's all I have. Do you have anything else?
I have got nothing. Nothing.
Nothing. That's all you get. Go home. You're probably already home if you're listening to this, unless you're Gene, and then you're probably walking and listening to this, or driving and listening to this, but everybody else, go to bed.
I'm just... Nice. Hope, you want us to take an episode someday just to be assholes? And... talk real slow.
No, it'll take us 5 hours to record it.
Right, and then that'll just teach Gene a lesson about listening to us at 1.25 speed or 1.5 speed.
No,
you have to double it up to like quadruple speed, and then we'd still sound normal.
But like in little parts, like we would talk normally, so we would just speed through, and he has to rewind it.
Yep.
That's what you get, Gene.
Resetting his speed setting. Meanwhile, when Gene meets us in Porpoise, he's gonna wonder why we don't sound like chipmunks.
That's what you get, Gene. I'm no chipmunk. You go home. I'm gonna roll my eyes at you like wolf.
I'm rolling my eyes in your general direction.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Where have you been, Lord? Run, my son. Oh, make my bed soon, for I'm weary from hunting.